Welcome to Ride Along Chronicles.
I'm Vicky.
I'm Tina.
And I'm Sally.
We are three great friends who created our own support system as we raise our families in the challenging first responder lifestyle.
Our confidential guests will share their stories in this safe space that didn't exist for us.
So ride along with us as we chronicle lessons learned and provide helpful resources to keep Leo families in the front seat. We are really excited about today's interview and topic. Over the past year, we have heard a lot of personal stories about critical incidences, mental health and challenges, and treatment and recovery. And a lot of those stories, we heard some of our guests share how their first responder agencies and peer support team helped them in some way. So we had the opportunity to interview a police peer support coordinator, Will, and what his experience was like operating a peer support team and how they could help employees and their families. So we decided to find out what peer support was like on the fire side of public safety. And we got this awesome opportunity to meet Jane, who is a firefighter herself and operates her department's peer support team. So what we learned about her commitment and what her team is doing for their employees and their families was so eye-opening, we just had to share the story. Welcome, Jane. Thank you for joining us. You know, we wanted to really talk about, you're going to be our very first fire interview on the fire first responder side. So thank you for joining us. Could you tell us, how did you get into the fire medical career?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to college and got a degree in exercise science. And at the time, I thought I wanted to be an athletic trainer. And as soon as I got my degree and finished, I realized that was not the gig for me at the time. At the time I was doing every adrenaline junkie kind of pastime. I was a rock climber, mountain biker, rafting guide. I loved being outdoors. I loved pushing myself to the limit, and I loved medicine. I kept getting told I need to test for fire and that I was a female and I would get hired. And I kept saying, no way, I don't want to get hired just because I'm a girl. So I put it off for many years.
Yeah.
And then I realized somebody taught me that, no, you do the exact same process as everybody else. So then I began testing and fell in love with what it was all about. And it took me a number of years to actually get hired, but I've been on almost 21 years now.
Wow. Well, thank you for your service with that. Have you had any special assignments, or are there special assignments with the fire department? I'm not familiar enough with, you know, with the police officers. They can do SWAT and they can do detective work, different specialties. Does the fire side have that?
Yeah, we have things like SWAT medics that go out with our PD SWAT fellas, and they work in the medic role. I've never signed up for that. We also have a hazmat specialty. I went down the route to become a paramedic. So I got my paramedic license my second year on, and that was when my first child was 6 months old. I became a paramedic.
Oh, wow.
And then became an engineer 7 years on the job. And from there, I became the peer support coordinator and went into our employee wellness a couple years ago.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's going to lead me into two other questions. One, are you married? And you just said you had a child. So how many children do you have?
Yeah, I've been with my husband for 27 years.
Okay.
And I have a bonus son who's 30, and then two of our own kids who are both teenagers.
Nice. Okay, wow. So a blended family. Well, congratulations on 30 years. And then you said you joined your peer support team, becoming a member of your peer support team. Before doing that, had you ever experienced peer support as a firefighter before joining the team?
Experienced it in the sense I never utilized it for myself.
Okay.
Other than I think I reached out one time and had a concern with one of our coordinators. I had a concern with one of our coworkers. But never utilized it for myself. But I was on the peer support team one time. We've gone through a different couple of phases trying to get it rolling, and it was a slow roll, which I'm sure it is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on a team. We just didn't really do anything. We weren't truly active.
Well, when and how did you become a peer support team member? How long into your career did you join that team, and how long have you been on it?
I became a member of the team maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. We went through a system where we did a department vote. So everybody in the department voted on 3 people in every status. So you went all the way from our admin, our BCs, engineers, captains, every rank, every style had 3 people that we voted on that we thought would be good in the position that we would consider using or turning to. And then from those people, they picked the ones that were voted for the most and reached out and asked if they would want to be on the team. And that was how I became part of the team at that time.
I have not heard of that process before.
No. It's kind of nice that you were recognized by your peers to be somebody that they look to for support in a time of need.
I was actually surprised by that. There was a team that they put together prior to that that was all kind of volunteer, but it kind of came through, and they reached out and asked if I was interested, and I didn't think I would be a good fit. There weren't very many girls at the time, and so I kind of declined from it, but then when I was voted on, I felt very privileged by it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, being like kind of a female firefighter, not as many of you, how has that played out into people coming to trust you or being part of kind of a sensitive team like peer support is?
So in our department, we have 2 of us in our role. We have a deputy chief and then my position. And when I got put into this position, I think there were 5 girls on the department, and now we have 10 or 11.
Nice.
We've really added a bunch of girls, and I keep getting told that they're, from especially the females, that they're glad that I'm in this role, because it would be really hard to come to a male for some of the issues that our females face. Meeting standards, pregnancy, you know, things like that. So I get a lot of positive feedback from my coworkers that having a female in one of these positions is a really good.
I hadn't thought of it in that way. But
right.
It's interesting.
It is. And what I'm hearing, though, is that you, from becoming a member when there was only like a handful of female employees and firefighters on the team, that you becoming and being chosen to be the coordinator actually brought on more female peer support members that actually can now tackle, like you said, some of those problems that are those issues that maybe can be a little sensitive or a little difficult for, you know, a male or vice versa. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. That means, you know, you kind of expanded the team, but you also like got a lot of trust and got some other females to come forward. That's not always easy.
Yeah. Well, in the 10 females that we have are in our department. We do have 5 maybe that are on our peer support team.
Wow. That's awesome.
So can I ask, what did you think the role of a coordinator was going to be like? How did you imagine it to be?
Well, when I was called to be asked to be on the team, my initial reaction was, heck no. I had no interest.
What was steering you away from that?
Yeah, no, I didn't want it. It was a 40-hour position.
Oh, wow.
And, right, and I loved my spot. I had a great crew. I loved being a paramedic. I loved being a driver. I loved my station. I was in a perfect spot. I had a great routine. But I was approaching 20 years on the job, and I'm battling a few injuries, and you're getting older. And I was, other than challenging myself with my skills and stuff like that, I didn't really have any challenges or further goals. I didn't want to promote. So I told him no, and then I thought about it for 24 hours, and I asked my crew what their thoughts were on it, and they said that they thought it would be a great fit. They were all very excited and very supportive of my thinking about it, and so we kind of sat. I had some things before I went in that I wanted to make sure I could continue to do, such as working out. I didn't want to have to sit behind a desk all day long. I wanted flexibility, and it's been great. I would say, though, that I never realized how much time I would spend on a computer, though.
Right. Oh. Besides the schedule, what other initial challenges did you like face or unexpected, you know, issues that came up when you first became a coordinator that you maybe didn't even think about or plan on?
Well, I always joke, I got a college degree. And my first day in this position, I spent the entire day learning how to move the cursor from one screen to another. It just wasn't
kind of sound like us in the start of the podcast.
Yeah. It was hard. I called IT every other day, and I know that they hated me, but it was just so many computer things I just didn't know. I didn't need to know, like, the back end of that stuff. And so that was really hard, but I would say I'm a pretty quick learner. I've got some skills now, and I got three screens I can navigate. So
look at you.
Nice.
Wow. You could tackle dispatching next with three screens.
So how did you find support that you needed to enhance your team?
Our peer support team?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, your peer support team.
Yep.
Let me clarify that.
So when I came in, we did a revamping of the program. Like I said, they did it by vote, and it wasn't really, there was no spark to it. We couldn't get it to really be an active entity on its own. So we went back to every person on that team and said, we know that you were voted, but that doesn't necessarily mean you really wanted to be on the team. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
So we touched this with every single person and had them make that commitment to us, whether they wanted to be a part of this team and the activity and the participation we needed from them.
When you're a member on the peer support for you guys, what does that commitment look like?
So I try to do a meeting about every 5 weeks or so. And then we do monthly contact forms. We have forms that we fill out that just, it shows categories of what kind of talks we're having with the people out there, whether it's marriage or job incidents, promotions, careers, mental issues, just so we can kind of keep data on what's the hot topics for our department during that time. And I've collected all this data, and you can definitely see curves and changes. You know, people are getting divorced left and right, and it shows it in the data of the monthly contact forms. And then just we do group call outs for incidences that could be high trauma for our crews, and we'll do a group text, you know, check in with these crew, and it's a way of communicating for everybody.
I was going to say, like, what is that kind of call out schedule look like? Is there time, like, do they have like a certain times of the month they're on call, or how does that work?
Do they rotate? And
yeah, that's my goal. So I have two team leaders that are out in the field, mm-hmm. and my goal is to eventually kind of have them run it, and they rotate who's running it. But right now, still, I'm the main coordinator. So I and whoever finds the call, but I kind of coordinate the information. These are the people involved. And then everybody just kind of picks and chooses, hey, I work with so-and-so, and I'll touch base with him. And I just kind of keep track of all that. But eventually I want my team leaders to be taking care of all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I just had a question kind of going back to when you were talking about your members going out, talking to people, and them kind of putting forward what issues are current in the department or for them. How do you gather that data and keep things confidential, or what's not confidential, so that they are continuing to come forward?
Yeah, so what they sent to me is just a quantity. They just put like four next to marriage and relationships. Okay. I don't need to know names. I don't need to know anything about the person. It's just a quantity.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of hard because most people look back over the past month and say, well, I think I talked about four times. So it's kind of just a guessing, but it's showing pretty accurate with the data that I'm collecting on an Excel sheet.
Gotcha.
And as you kind of, you know, you're getting this formality, like you're saying, you're kind of getting your team structure, and you're getting, you know, the rotation, getting your team leaders, like you said, up to speed so they can kind of start taking on some of those responsibilities. What did you find challenging? Just trying to keep all this together, and at the same time, you know, growing your team while you're still trying to get it promoted throughout the department, building that trust. Were there some like times where you just kind of, it was just overwhelming and, you know, you just had to kind of figure it out? Or were you able to seek out some other support or resources from other colleagues?
Well, that's a great question. I came into this position right before the peak of COVID time. And I, again, was learning everything new. Like I said, still trying to figure out the cursor. And taking over this team was a big challenge. I felt that I had everybody's trust on the team I came in being told I was pretty well respected, but it was getting everybody to engage and participate. That was hard. Everybody was really struggling with staffing. Morale was really low. Everybody was dealing with that.
Trying to get everybody kind of really to dig deep. Can I really do this? Do I have the wherewithal during that time?
Exactly. It was a very tough year.
Well, and you guys are doing fire as well as medical calls. So when you think of COVID, like your crews and your employees were like in people's homes, in their face, handling, each person, really, really through touch, through contact. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure that added stress, we don't think about it as much because I think that impacted fire way more than PD in a lot of ways. So, I mean, here you are now trying to, like you said, conquer, trying to keep their spirits up and trying to keep them kind of healthy, but also mentally kind of, supported. But they're having the same exact fears that everybody else has just doing the job. That had to be hard.
Yeah, it was. People were getting sick and we're trying to do contact tracing and some of our healthiest guys got the sickest. And it was really hard to keep the morale up during that time.
So how did you find the support or the resources as you're trying, like you said, to conquer, all of this new information, learn the position, deal with the pandemic, get, your team motivated, and then actually start building it, just because obviously it probably didn't stop for you. How did you seek those additional support? Yeah.
So because COVID was new, our department didn't know who should be responsible for it, and it fell on me and my deputy chief. So it probably wasn't until March when COVID started to slow down that I could really start focusing on why I was in there and what my purpose was.
Right.
And getting that team, reaching out, touching base with everybody, getting everybody to verbally commit to participating, and then just doing meetings. We would just do a check-in meeting once a month. What do you guys want to learn? What kind of goals do you want to have? Learning my crew and my team. And then I became part of the regional wellness team. And that opened up the doors to a ton of different people that I could meet and talk about their department's programs. And that's been incredible help.
Are there things that you instituted because of COVID to help your team stay bright and ready and available?
Or even mental health because
that's
of all that?
That's what I mean, like the mental health portion. Did you have to kind of step back and keep them healthy in order to be available to the rest of the department?
We brought in some training. We had two different types of training that focused on different things, like suicide and then like a peer support advanced class of sorts that kind of focused on taking care of themselves first because they're not going to be able to help other people unless they're good and healthy. Gotcha. And that was a good lesson for me in this role too, was learning that life balance.
I do want to go back to, you were talking about you and it was your assistant chief that was helping with your
deputy chief.
Deputy chief. Okay. When you were kind of identifying the components of a peer support team, can you tell me what those are? Can you share what makes up, the not just the team itself, but what you guys do and what you actually need to promote and convey to your recipients. They need to understand what peer support is. What are those components?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that pops out in that, the one that's the biggest one is trust. The department needs to trust our peer support. My team needs to trust me. Trust has to be there for this team to even exist.
Sure.
And then with that trust, it goes hand in hand with confidentiality, right?
Yeah.
They're going to trust us. They have to trust that we're going to do everything we can to keep everything confidential. So those two are really big key factors. But then right behind that is buy-in. You have to have the upper management buy-in to the success of this program. They have to support you and not have to ask questions. They have to trust my position and the deputy chief that we are doing the best we can for our people, and they don't need to know the names. They don't need to know exactly what we're doing. And that's hard for upper level management to do.
For sure.
And our department's been great. We've had a couple situations. The only thing they've said is he in a good spot? And we're like, yes. And that's all they need to know.
So with the trust / confidentiality / buy-in, how did you bring or enhance those components to your team and, you know, your department? How did you incorporate all of that?
Well, the trust, I think, needs to start with my deputy chief and myself. We've got to be the backbone to it. Then the team has to be chosen who the members trust, right? So we've got that pretty well taken. The confidentiality, we do a ton of training on all the ways that confidentiality plays a role. And when we talk to our members, when they come to us for something, I'm always very specific to say, your name is never used, or your name will have to be said in this instance, or what do you want me to tell people when they come to me asking? Just so they know that it's completely transparent and their wishes are what my purpose is for.
And a lot of reassurance. So we really,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
What kind of resources do you have for your different traumas and places that you refer?
I mean, right. How did you have to learn all?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot. I had never used anything trauma related prior to coming on here, but there are EMDR is a really big facet of trauma counseling. So in the state that I am, we have a house bill that guarantees if you've been subject to one of six criteria of trauma, such as a child drowning, code witnessing, a co-worker get injured, you know, there's six of them, that you can go to any trauma trained counselor and your department will pay for it. That's nice. A house bill.
Nice.
Wow. Yes.
Did you walk into some of those resources, or how did you seek them out?
So a couple of them were already established when I came into the position.
Gotcha.
I just don't think they were well understood. It was still relatively house bill. Yeah. Then it's just networking, going and talking to them, asking that counseling group, you know, what is their theory? How do they make it work? Mm-hmm. Just so I can make rapport with them. Right. And then I do a ton of conferences, and at these conferences, there's trauma counselors there that are there to learn about our culture and what our needs are. And it's just an open door for networking.
Nice. Have you run into any problems with upper management or upper echelon kind of pushing your boundary a little bit or giving you pushback?
I have a really good deputy chief, and he doesn't tolerate it.
Nice.
So I'm only an engineer level. I don't really have, you know, the whole chain of command thing is super important, but he cuts that right at the door. And
he's
done a really good job guiding them of their position and our position together. So
gotcha. So having that kind of deputy chief in place kind of cuts off a lot. Otherwise, would you think being more up, I don't know the levels in fire, so excuse my ignorance about that, but more higher in the chain of command, do you think that coordinator positions should be kind of an upper echelon so they can cut through some of the muck?
No. Necessarily. I think that there should be a deputy chief or a chief in that division, but I don't think like my position doesn't necessarily need to be higher. Before I came in, it was a captain's position, but they quickly learned that you got to fill it with the right person, and it's not by what status you are.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
And, you know, we've heard this in some of our other, you know, guests who've shared where peer support, you know, came into their lives. You know, unfortunately, it's not always when it's good, right? Like there's always something bad has to happen, whether it's a critical incident or, you know, a medical issue or mental health issue that comes across. Was there ever a time when you realized, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Was there ever an actual example where, you know, you trying to help somebody, you realized, you know, how broad, but also how scary and involved sometimes peer support coordinators or even members have to get into somebody's world.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty ironic. I went and did a tour in Florida for a drug recovery place. And the one of the instructors there, his motto was, don't ever invest more in the person that they're willing to invest in their own care. And wow. I heard it over and over, but it didn't really stick until shortly I came back and we had a member who needed some serious help. And we bent over backwards trying to help this guy. And we invested way more in him than he was investing in himself. And it was hard because the department can't see what we're doing behind the scenes. And so they only see his actions and his words and his frustrations, but not everything that we're doing behind the scenes. So I always balance that in everything I'm doing with people is I'm going to give them as much as they're willing to give themselves, maybe a little bit more, but I'm not going to go overboard as long as they're there to help themselves as well.
Oh yeah. It's hard. I mean, I've never honestly being in this so long, I've never even heard that, but I think that's a great motto. I may have to invest in that a little bit because, you know, it is very frustrating when you give so much and, you know, your team members are not setting boundaries sometimes because, you know, they're their only support system for these folks that they're helping. To then have something like that, that might be a good training tool actually.
Yeah.
But from the other side though, when you're dealing with these families though, that, you know, especially like you said early on where you're still trying to get your feet under you and understand all these components, was there ever a time where, you know, one of these employees that came forward for assistance or maybe was just somebody else referred them, and as you're working with them, was there ever a time that you realized there's a missing element to all of this, which is the families?
That's funny because that's our big focus this year. We were very successful in helping one of our other members, and his wife dealt with his trauma as well as her own, and he got the help, but she got left behind. And it was heartbreaking because he came home on a healing path and she's still in the same spot she was when he left. And your hands are tied. I mean, we offered him everything in the book and she got nothing. So that's our big focus this year. We have a nonprofit out there that we've been working with who is offering counseling, and they have just opened it up for spouses and family, and we are so excited to start.
Some of our like best recovery stories of our guests is when they actually specifically mentioned that peer support from their first responders agency, what involvement they had and what resources they were able to get. And some of those successes are because of that collective, collaborative, you know, support plan that includes not just the employee and their workplace, but also their peer and their family. And to be honest with you, we saw a difference even in our interviews of families that are saying, I wish there was something, right? Mm-hmm. Or I heard about peer support later. Or gosh, maybe this is even the first time that they didn't even know there was such a thing. And if you compare it to some of our other stories, there's a huge, like there's a missing element there. And that's kind of, you know, we're seeing it everywhere. And that's why I was just wondering, you know, you're building a new team, you're trying to get all these resources for your employees themselves. But along the way, as the problems didn't stop, I'm assuming. Like just because you were new, once you promoted out there, I'm assuming like you said, COVID, then critical incidents, then the house bill that you mentioned. So I'm assuming pretty soon, you know, your team was up and running and running like for real everywhere. And I was just wondering, how did you just handle all that? You know, how did you try to prioritize your own self-care as well as your team?
So COVID was a big hit for me because I had just stepped into that role, and then we were going 1,000 miles an hour into the COVID world, learning everything new, and I'm still trying to figure out my position. So I came out of that period a little bit frazzled, and I quickly realized I needed to find a balance. And at the time, I was working a lot of overtime. It kept me feeling the pulse of the people out there. It kept me in the ranks. It was a good reminder of what I loved, what my passion was, right?
Mm-hmm.
But 3 days off now, poor me, right?
Right. Poor you. You're like, I need 10 days off, not three.
I know. That's why I hate saying that, but Yeah. I needed that balance. And so I cut back on that over time, and I started spending more time with my family. And if I'm going to preach it to the people, I've got to live it myself too. So.
Oh, and that's hard.
Yeah. Walking the talk is a little hard, isn't it? I mean, it really keeps you in line. Talking about the components and creating this, your team, and you're coming into this with little to no knowledge, right? You've never built a peer support team before, and now you got your team on board. What kind of training did you go through? Did they go through? And what type of continual training happens year after year or every half year, whatever your schedule might be? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, everybody talks about how bad COVID was, but one good thing that came out of COVID for us was webinars. Everything became virtual. Right. So I was doing virtual trainings every week on something, and they were offered everywhere on every topic I wanted. So I learned a ton, and I tracked all of my trainings that I had on virtual webinars. I sent some of those out to my team and had them do webinars as well. And just gives them different tools and different ways to look at things, gives them the confidence that they need to tackle some of these tougher positions that they're going to be put in talking with people.
Amazing. Can I ask, do you come from a small, mid-size, or large department?
Honestly, I don't know. I would say we're relatively medium-large. We have about 250 firefighters.
Okay. So when Vicki had mentioned, she'd said the word collaborative a little bit back, and I wanted to ask, how do you build relationships with not only your resources, but with other agencies? And do you ever team up with other agencies to co-peer those in need?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because naturally I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
So going to some of these conferences with a lot of people, it's really been hard for me to network. But when you have a passion for something, it's a lot easier to find that common ground to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I have made a lot of contacts and networks through these conferences. So we have that regional wellness committee that I'm a part of. And so it gave me a ton of people within my neighboring departments that I could reach out to. And we have a general database that we can collect their, you know, share information with each other. And that's helped tremendously. And then we have reached out, and we had a pretty large incident that involved three of our units and a number of our PD guys. And we had our neighboring peer support team from the neighboring city come in and help us with that post incident. And it went really smooth. They had a little bit of different approach, so it was a good learning experience for us as well, but there was a really good assist. They kind of kept everything very neutral for all of that were involved in that.
Wow. You don't hear that a lot. I mean, I think we've heard here and there in this state of, you know, fire and PD agencies kind of working together, especially if they're smaller and, you know, they have a lot of the same mutual, respect, and also like units sometimes, like you were talking about SWAT before, you know, some agencies that already have other units that, you know, kind of interface with each other when it comes to one public safety agency to the other. So I'm just curious, you know, for you, do you have that relationship with your PD? Because I think for those agencies that had that opportunity, it's been pretty cool to hear how some of that has worked out and how collectively, you know, for their employer, they could sometimes get more resources and more budgeting or just more bodies to really be able to handle some of the larger incidents, you know, should they happen in that jurisdiction.
Yeah, no, since I've come in, the PD side also kind of formed a new team, and we collaborate on everything. We take trips to vet facilities together. We collaborate on department trainings that we can share, you know, the resources, like we had O2X come out and we shared that resource together. We collaborate on a ton of stuff. We meet for lunch every couple months and go over things. We have a really great working relationship. We even did, we're starting to do some of our post incidences with them. They tend to do their debriefings that shift the morning that those guys get off, that their members get off. And we normally wait a day or two Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a balance, but we opened it up this for one of these last calls that we had for any of our members that wanted to go to their one that morning. And we had five of our guys show up for that debriefing. That's awesome. And it went really smooth. Oh, and we had dispatch. So it was a really good working relationship.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Jean, I'm going to do it again. But this time I'm going to break it down and I'm going to pause. I do have, I'd like to know, what piece of advice would you give to the following about the importance of peer support? And it's going to be just a couple of categories. What piece of advice would you give to an up-and-coming peer support coordinator about the importance of peer support?
For firefighters, we're a very tight-knit group. We're like a family with each other. But we're also one of the first to see signs of somebody that's struggling within our department. So we need to create that strong support team that empower those people so that they can make that difference. So being a coordinator, you need to be the pulse of that program to get into the hearts of our people out there. So it's self-running.
Amazing. And what would you advise an up-and-coming peer support member?
Back to my old motto is don't commit more of yourself to save somebody than they're willing to commit.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I do too. And what piece of advice would you give agency leaders?
Place the right personnel in this division. Make sure that the trust and the confidentiality is with the people running this program. And they need to be able to trust them.
Yeah. Okay, two more. What advice would you give a first responder about peer support?
To know who your peer support team is to understand that they're willing and their sole intent is for your mental health and your mental well-being. Our goal is for everybody to retire mentally well.
Yeah, I hear that. And then lastly, what advice would you give a family member about peer support?
So the first responders, we have a ton of resources available, but we also know that family also shares in that trauma of their own as well as the ones with their people, that their spouses or whatever. But like we said, historically, the family isn't taken care of. So we're slowly changing that. We have resources for family now, and we're just starting up a family support group with spouses that we're trying to get that ball rolling as well.
Amazing. Well, good luck with that. I wish
you might have to have you
that.
Back to talk about it, that.
Absolutely.
When it's a little more
up and running.
Yeah.
So last question, looking back, is there anything you would have done differently with peer support?
Honestly, I would say no. I don't think that I've done everything right. But I think the things that I've learned along the way have shown me the right direction to go. I think the biggest error I could ever make is to break that confidentiality, and I've never done that as far as I know.
Yeah.
But I don't have any regrets for the path that I've taken with it.
Awesome. That's an amazing answer. Thank you. Jean, your passion and your commitment to your service and your peer support team and your role as the coordinator is just so heartwarming and encouraging, and really, I'm so honored to speak with you. We really are. We're very honored to have you on our podcast, and we can't thank you enough for sharing that information and enlightening others about what peer support is.
Not only that, just being there and doing the work that you do.
Yeah. Thanks for riding along with us today. We hope our perspectives from the passenger seat helped you gain some insights to navigate the Leo lifestyle. For additional information and resources, visit us on Instagram at Ride Along Chronicles. Follow, like, and comment for more. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, hit the subscribe button. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future topics, leave a comment or send a confidential email. See you on the next ride.